I would like to begin this episode by acknowledging that I am located in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, and I am privileged and honored to live and learn on the unceded, unsurrendered territory of the Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation.
Hello, and welcome to Trench Leadership, a podcast from the front. Trench Leadership is a proud supporter of the Concussion Legacy Foundation for their leadership in advancing the study, treatment, and prevention of brain trauma for athletes, veterans, and other at-risk groups. Trench Leadership, a podcast from the front, is a show for emerging leaders of all professions that offers advice, inspiration, and practical tools from a diverse breadth of leaders who have made the mistakes, had the triumphs, and are still learning along the way. Here's your host, Simon Cardinal.
Hi there, and welcome to another episode of Trench Leadership, a podcast from the front. Before we begin, I'm humbled to be able to say that Trench Leadership, a podcast from the front, was listed as number 8 in the top 20 for best Canadian leadership themed podcasts in 2022. I can't thank all of my supporters and listeners enough as we've traveled along this wild ride. But stay tuned, because 2023 will have even more guests with rich and impactful stories, advice, and inspiration as we all continue to lead from the trenches. But for now, it's about this episode, so let's get to it. Fear is the most basic of human instincts. We need it to tell us when to be cognizant of impending danger. And there's a reason why there have been many episodes to talk about fear and the power and the dangers of it. The challenge with fear is that it can and wants to take over. Fear wants to keep us inside our comfort zones, keep us safe, secure in the knowledge that if we don't push ourselves, we can't get hurt. But for leaders, the question is, how can we harness this power of fear to not only survive, but to thrive? And so, in this episode, you'll hear from Richard Blank, CEO for Costa Rica's call center, who will talk about his experiences with fear in the workplace. Richard will use his personal and professional examples to talk about how emerging leaders can live with their fear, use it to create strong and powerful teams. Lastly, Richard will give practical advice to leaders so they can use their fear to help themselves and their teams thrive. But you know, as always, it's never about me. No one wants to hear from me. They want to hear from the guests. So I'm going to try and be quiet and introduce Richard. Hey, Richard, how's it going out there?
Hey, Simon, I'm so happy to be with you and your audience today. And got a lot of great ideas to share with you. And I believe that we're going to put fear to bed. It's something that I know we'll be able to take care of on this episode.
Well, that sounds fantastic. It's an important thing. It's a very important topic because it comes up a lot. People speak about fear a lot, which we'll get to a little bit later on. But for now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to hear about your journey. Let's tell the listeners about Richard and how we got to this point.
Well, it definitely begins in Northeast Philadelphia. When I graduated the proud Abington High School back in 91, I decided to be a Spanish communication major. I love those sort of classes. I was really more of a humanitarian in regards to my studies. So I went to the University of Arizona, and I was there for 5 years. It's too much of a fun school just to do it in 4. But I also spent my junior year abroad in Spain, so I got to master the language. And when I came back, I was an intern for Telemundo. Postgrad, I sold beer for Corona. So I always had fun jobs that involved public relations and Spanish and really getting myself out there. But Simon, when I was 27, I was given a 1 in a million opportunity to move to Costa Rica. And I took it. And I worked at my friend's center. Was there for 4 years, not sea level. I was in the cubicles with the agents. I saw the good and the bad and the happy and the sad and broke bread. But I also saw something, the art of speech, and where you could extend dignity to the people that work with you and just make sure you give them that sort of self-reliance and self-confidence. Instead of burning out or pushing away a career, they can actually thrive and grow within something. And so for me, I decided to stay. I've been in Costa Rica for 22 years, celebrating our 15th year in business of owning a call center. And there was a lot of twists and turns, Simon, that got me here. And I'll definitely pick it apart for you and explain how I was able to not conquer my own fear, but a lot of the fear that other people had. The naysayers and gray believers and the Debbie Downers. Well, I had to put their their fear to rest as well. And so we can collectively talk about all those different angles that influenced a lot of my decisions on my journey.
Well, thank you so much for offering a little bit about yourself and understanding how we got to this point, because you're right. There are many Debbie Downers out there. And I think one of the things that's interesting is in a lot of organizations, the metric that we tend to use, especially in North American culture, the metric that we tend to use to gauge our success is how quickly and how high up the particular rank structure, the chain of command, from to use some of my military parlance, how quickly we get up these particular things. The irony of that is if you go too quickly or you do it in a different way or whatever, quite often you're being judged for being that person who's moving up the chain of command, and that causes a bunch of the Debbie Downers, and it can be challenging, and it can cause a lot of fear and anxiety for people. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
I most certainly do. The fact that I was never a supervisor, I was never a manager. I went from call center agent, best friends with the owner, to owning my own company. So I guess what it did was it preserved my essence. So I never sold out. I didn't have to backstab or play office politics or be somebody that was not myself in order to get that promotion. So I guess my style is still very pure. But then again, the best leaders are the ones that set the example, because if people are quitting and they're not working to their best potential, it is a reflection of the coach. I always believe that if a child is well-behaved, well-spoken, and knows their please and thank yous, it's definitely a reflection of the parent. And so even though I'm not taking all of the credit of individuals that come into my call center, I believe in nurture. So if they're with me, I can get rid of bad habits. I can extend to them very good soft skills, or maybe even some bedside manner. For me, I wish I had $1 million code that I cracked. But most of this stuff is just extending empathy, is to really being an active listener to somebody. And you were in the military, which I highly respect. And what happens is they train you so you come back alive, and that you save democracy, and that you're heroes for people. So your drill sergeants, they needed to bend you, but they weren't going to break you. And that's the thing with individuals. You work out in the gym until you feel the burn. And there are certain individuals that have made it off of mountains and across oceans when they should have been dead 3 weeks ago, but there's still some sort of light inside of them that they don't know where it came from. But obviously it was from their ancestors that had to hunt to survive, get through certain famines and certain sort of other issues, but make it through these centuries to get us to our strength today. So who am I to complain? I have every single luxury at my fingertips. And I think a lot of it, my good friend, is purely mental. I believe fear is a morbid anticipation of something that hasn't happened yet. Naturally, in the military, you can work against fear physically. There are ways to work against cold and heat and hunger and exhaustion. But it's the mental forced march. That's the fear that people need to overcome. And as much as you can be with your friends, you could still feel extremely alone. And it's when your head hits the pillow and you have those moments of clarity when you're looking at yourself in the mirror. How else are you going to put that fear to rest? And once you're not afraid of it anymore and you embrace it, you almost drink it and you can't wait to see it, then you've overcome it. And for me, it was all the, you've never opened a business before. Your Spanish isn't good enough. You haven't lived abroad. What are you going to do with payroll? Blah, 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 blah. Tell me something more I can't do. You're just giving me small challenges. And one by one, I was able to do the, and it's not that difficult. It's just about maturity, Simon. Sometimes, my friend, it's about impulse control. And how about this? You were mentioning earlier about delegation and promotion. Well, the only way that a tree trunk gets better is with branches and roots. I needed depth and I needed width, and I needed to bring people along with me in order to give me that sort of foundation, Simon, and that sort of stability. So I think if people have earned it through merit, through their hard work and through their vigor and showing grit and doing a spit handshake and giving their word, But then by all means, instead of the envy or the people that are against that sort of promotion, everybody can be in agreement that that individual earned it. And they were the best out of the whole crew. They were the strongest and the smartest. And in the military, it's exactly what you need in order for you to win every battle. And so, not saying that I can compare call centers to the military, but I've seen people burn out. I've seen people cry, and I've seen a simple F you on a phone call to somebody, it could break you. And we're talking about very delicate individuals in a certain stage of their life that I hold sacred, because there are outside influences, Simon, that may affect their work performance. Without maybe disclosing everything to me, you and I might be able to deduct what's happening with somebody. And through diplomacy and through strategic rhetoric, you and I could recommend putting water on your face, taking a 5-minute breath, or in my case, going downstairs and playing pinball with me in my game room. But these are the sort of things, my friend, that can be very consistent in regards to creating a sort of culture of reducing stress and having sort of habits that will eliminate stress. And so that's the sort of harmony and synergy that I think that we can build off from one another.
I completely agree with you. And we do feed off of each other. When we're all doing okay, we will all kind of have that sense of things are okay. But if one person starts to get overwhelmed with having any type of fear for whatever the reason may be, then another will. These things are contagious. We can actually sense the concern and the stress levels that are coming off of other people. And the challenge of that is, as the leader, it's our responsibility to lead the group. But if everyone's running around stressed out, they're looking to us to be that leader. And then if we're stressed out and we're running around, allowing our fear to overwhelm us, that's going to have a trickle-down effect as well. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
Well, let's use the parachute theory. First, you need the parachute so you'll survive the jump. Second, they need to teach you how to jump and how to land and what to do, how to repair it, use the emergency chute, even showing you how to pack it. So I believe that anybody that is jumping out of an airplane, if they've gone through that sort of training and that sort of preparation, they might still have butterflies. But obviously, the unknown gets reduced and the confidence gets increased. It's about giving a level playing field, certain resources to eliminate fear. And how about this? Since the majority, if not all of my agents, English is their second language, Simon, I will put it into perspective. Learning a second language is 10 times harder than any sort of campaign that I could put them on. So imagine that sort of structure and discipline that they've already proven prior to coming to my company. And so let's take a step back. Let's laugh at it. Why not walk in the rain and smile for a little bit? It's not going to hurt you. And if this is what you're choosing to do for a living, realize this: you might get hung up on for a living. You might be asking for clarification or edification on a phone call. And in the military, your military alphabet is key. When I use that to pronounce an exotic last name, with all due respect, or to verify an email address so it doesn't bounce back. And even someone like yourself, my friend Simon, you know perfectly well, if I started doing the Alpha Bravo Charlie Delta, you would say, I served. And then we talk about our families and how proud we are. And I've seen about a 30 to 40% continued call ratio when we're concluding the call by verifying information in the military alphabet, especially around Memorial Day, veterans, or any sort of special holiday to, you know, really cheer on our heroes. It's really been something to just put the selling aside. And it's been able to assist us in regards to our converted calls. And so let's chip away at fear. Let's replace the bad part with something that's happy, the yin and the yang, the darkness to the light. And eventually, you'll just have your 10% demon, the one thing you're just worried about that you could never kick. But 90% is something just by muscle memory and just through practice or even dedicated practice. You'll be hitting bullseyes. You can run 5 miles at 4 a.m. like you guys do. You know, you can swim through icy water and all that stuff. But in the beginning, it seemed impossible. But the more that you test yourself, and the more that somebody, I guess, balances the bike for you, Simon, to know the right time to let go. And even because you're Canadian and I'm from Philly, even let you skin your knee every now and again. Come on, you got to get a couple war scars there. But it's a way of growing up, you know? It's what you need to do.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And the big thing with these types of things that you had mentioned was I would suggest getting comfortable with fear. I'd like to use an example to expand on your example about learning languages. So I grew up speaking only English my whole life. In Canada, we're required to do some years of some French training, some French education rather. But I joined the military. I did a bunch of different things. And then so at 42, the military decided that I was worth putting into the succession planning program. And that meant that I needed to be bilingual. And in Canada, our two official languages are English and French. So I had to learn French. So they put me on a year-long full-time French course, which is an amazing opportunity. But it's an interesting experience to go from being an expert in my field one day to not being able to put a six-word sentence together the next day. That is a very humbling experience. And I knew that going in that this was going to be very difficult. And my fear didn't necessarily take over, but I certainly was feeling that. And as I got going through it, it was a very humbling experience to all of a sudden not be the expert in the room. And I'm doing these different things and I'm trying to talk. And it was difficult because we were living near Quebec. And so we'd be going out and I would try to speak French and most people were very good about it. And I don't remember the people that were very helpful with me. What I do remember are the people that would smirk and smile if I made a mistake. And that would just feed into my fear and my insecurities. But an interesting thing happened somewhere along the way around the 6-7 month mark. I just accepted the fact that I just had a realization. I am not going to be able to do this perfectly, but I can do this. And I was able to embrace that fear. And then even if someone made a mistake, I even found myself stopping apologizing for speaking mistakes in the language. And I just embraced that. And it was a difficult thing to do, but I had to let myself do that. And I guess what I'm getting at in my long-winded Simon type of way is to say that's important to get comfortable with whatever the fear points are that you're experiencing. If you can acknowledge them and not even necessarily embrace them, but just acknowledge that they're there, that will help overcome them or at least live within that fear and be comfortable with it because it doesn't go away. I still feel anxiety when I need to speak French and I'm not in an environment that is comfortable for me or familiar. But I don't let that beat me. I continue to press forward because the only way I'm going to get better is if I keep practicing, which just makes sense. What do you think about that?
Well, listen, they might speak French better than you, but if you're better looking than they are, you still win that day. So don't worry about it. And secondly, look at it like a game. I always thought that it was like being James Bond if you could speak a second language in somewhere else. And also the doctors say that crossword puzzles and second languages are the greatest way to keep your brain active in your later years. But it's also a respect thing. You're such an open-minded kind of guy. And it's just one more way to show good faith where your culture and traditions, which are so important where you're at, may not have the same effect somewhere else, but by showing that second language to me is not only just open doors, but has really given me an edge with my agents. I'm not just a visiting tourist or a person that locks himself in his office and signs checks. I walk rows. I really know everybody's name. I take a really big interest in their career growth by doing training and listening to their calls, but just by learning their language, and they might smile in regards to my accent, but look at it like a Marilyn Monroe beauty mark. An accent is cool. If someone has good grammar, if they're able to use proper vocabulary, and if their tone is confident and the phonetics is something you just might not be able to kick. I have a Philadelphia accent. It's very difficult for me. But by living in Spain, I learned a certain tense, the vosotros form, mastering the subjunctive tense. I mean, these are the things that I find beautiful in romantic languages. It talks about desire and doubt. So it really gives the person the ability to do some real depth expression. and to really convey their ideas to somebody in a Renaissance sort of way. It's almost poetic. And for me, I find it very stimulating because you can really paint more of a picture with your words than just having a sentence that comes out like a print. And so, once again, my friend, if you are just showing such good faith, if you're able to jump clouds on just, vocabulary nouns and not know any sort of verbs or grammar structure, people will see that and will. Anybody that laughs, that's my main man. At the end of the evening, they're going to love you anyway because you're going to kill them with kindness. And you may need to passive aggressively and inadvertently, Simon, teach them some manners and a lesson that it's not going to be something, especially you, that's seen things and have saved the world. Somebody snickering at your accent in French is something you could easily conquer. So I think that's something that you just go there and you work through it because once you master that, everything else will be candy. Your toes will be tapping. And for me, I needed to overcome that initially. My goal was to speak Spanish. And the ones that were really disrespectful, I'll catch you next week. I really don't have time for that. But the ones that paid it forward, that assisted me and gave me really cool expressions or worked on certain grammar expressions I had in a very patient way, I couldn't thank them enough. But I tell you what, if I had to sit there and study a textbook, which is the first 6 months, you really got to learn the grammar, it was monotonous. It seemed like a chore. But when you watched movies in Spanish with the subtitles, when you'd go out to eat, when you do other events, you become embraced in it. You live it. And there's a certain point to where your body, like a long distance runner, instead of getting tired, you almost start giving yourself the energy and you build upon it. You peak. And then it doesn't become difficult anymore. It's like hitting the gym, quitting smoking. There's a thousand things you and I can discuss where it's the first step in the first couple of weeks are so difficult, but after a while you crave it and that's all you think about. You work your schedule around going to the gym, or going home and making a good. And then you start getting addicted to the languages. But maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I mean, the important thing here is that each individual, I don't know how they were raised or the influence of their friends, teachers, sports coaches, what did they do to them to not properly give them the sort of backbone to be able to take the hits? It's true. And because it's almost like the Rube Goldberg effect, and this is a mental thing. His are the non-electrical machines. 99 times it doesn't work. It's the 100th time. Pro golfers that get the one or two hole in ones in a whole career. What is your long distance thinking? What's the long game? Because if you can't handle this, how are you going to handle the bigger stuff? How are you going to handle a mortgage, raising children, raising grandchildren, even as you say, running a company and being a CEO, if you can't even make your own bed and take care of your own health, show up on time. Yeah, but things are tough. Well, name me one person where things aren't tough. That's what you
Yeah,
signed up for.
exactly.
These are the sort of prices that you pay. But as I say, unless you're not doing something unethical, unless you are deceiving people or being facetious, that's a completely different story. But if you're doing the things correctly and you are showing up at your job and you're treating people a certain way, that fear should immediately be reduced because you see the score and you know exactly what you're working with. And I think that gives people a lot of peace of mind.
I completely agree with that. That peace of mind is important, and we only more often than not the way to get to there is to work through the fear, work within it, as I love to say. I am curious, when we're talking about fear and what we're doing, what would you would say to people, or what advice would you give for helping people understand when they're living in a fearful moment? Because quite often, when we're in the moment, it's very, very difficult to see that we're afraid, that we're stressed out, that we're doing these different
Okay.
things, and that's affecting us. So would you have any type of physical signs or things that you would recommend to people to say, hey, take a moment and and see that you might be living in a fearful moment.
Absolutely. And we're talking about face-to-face, micro-expression reading and body language. Is that correct?
Anything that you think would help someone understand when they're stressed out, when they're living in a fearful moment, or help emerging leaders so that they can help their other team members see when they're stressed out or they're being letting fear take over their
Excellent. Moment. Let me give you the psychology first, and then I'll give you a certain sort of offense and defense to that. The psychology is, it depends on knowing this individual. That's number one. And number two, there are sort of reactions that people have that you may or may not be familiar with. And you have to also put into consideration the sort of semantics, the word choice that you use, what the authority is, who the person receiving it is, the time frame on it, sense of urgency and stuff like that. But let's just throw someone into a Thanksgiving dinner with family, potentially very serious argument situation. My suggestion for somebody where there may be heightened anxiety on your end or even somebody else's end, the first thing to do is to look in between their eyes, kind of like where the unibrow is. There's energy givers and energy suckers, Simon. If we are looking at each other and we're positive, share the energy, go back and forth. But if someone could throw your game off, really with those beady black devilish eyes, just knock you out with that, I wouldn't give them that sort of advantage. I believe that looking in between their eyes gives them the impression that you're looking at their eyes. And secondly, it's not going to throw you off. Two ears, one mouth technique. If you have the strategy of listening and speaking second, well, then by all means, let them tell you everything. There's a chance that your lack of preparation would be their emergency. Maybe something else that you might think is so important means nothing to them. Why sell steak when they want lobster? Slow down. You could be miscommunicating. There could be a perspective, an opinion, a moment. So I think the greatest thing is through deduction. You'll understand, and don't interrupt. Take notes, ask them again, are you finished? Is there anything you'd like to add? I always believe in neutral tones. I know it may be difficult. I think it's very important when someone is speaking to practice breathing in for, holding for, out for, holding for. Why? You're in the corner like a boxer. You're not talking. I know you're taking notes and listening. So why huffy puffy? Reduce it, slow down it, and you'll see through the hypotenuse, you will get a nice angle to be able to recharge yourself and to be able to listen to these individuals. Now, if you have the luxury of time, sleep on it, write a draft and don't send it. And maybe by the next day when you've thought about it and put things in perspective, you might have overextended yourself. You might have not said enough. Your tone might have not been appropriate. And there's a very good chance of a reset. Instead of trying to put something back together that was broke or having to walk back things that you say. And what I try to do when somebody is out of character, and this is really not who I've seen the majority of the time, either A, I give them the benefit of the doubt, or B, it's almost like what they say with fire, stop, drop, and roll. Stop what you're doing, drop that topic, and see if you can roll forward, because obviously someone's upset right now. Yeah. And I don't like things to be deal breakers, especially if a relationship has gone so far. You really should give somebody a mulligan every now and again, or a second shot at something. And don't be surprised if somebody comes to you the next day because you were very diplomatic and thoughtful. They'll come the next day realizing their mistakes, almost begging for forgiveness. And listen, if you can get through those sort of bumps with people, then you'll have the best relationships. I mean, because you judge character during chaos. And I've seen people I thought were not just friends, but let's say business-wise. I saw people during COVID that I expected to step up to the plate that disappointed me, and other individuals during, as I mentioned, chaos, that had the most level head. They could have done surgery that day. And they got promoted quickly because they showed that sort of leadership when the world was burning. And I believe people have their moments to shine, my friend. And it doesn't matter if you've been in my industry for 10 years, you could walk in the first day. And if you have that sort of gleam in your eye and spring in your step, by all means, you and I, Simon, add momentum to that. And we see how high you can fly and how far you can go. But you're my boss, Simon. You're not supposed to know my name. Well, maybe I'm the first one that does. Maybe I'll be that guy that really tells you how amazing you are, not because it's a Wednesday, because I listened to that phone call that you made last week with Mrs. Jones for 14 minutes. And I heard you confirming the order and talking about her dog. And congratulating her on her wedding anniversary and the fact that she asked to speak to your supervisor to let you know how amazing you were, because you, I guess what you did was you changed any sort of misconception she may have by speaking with a telemarketing call center agent. And so that's the sort of fear people walk into, sort of bad apples in an industry or people that have not done the correct thing. When I say I own a call center, oh, Wolf of Wall Street. Boiler room. I'm like, yeah, I could do it. Doesn't mean we do sell stock, but I could always talk about that. And I can also talk about some of the most amazing people that do this for a living, that help grow companies and retain clients that might be leaving and get referrals, and they can do upsells. Or how about this? You want to reduce some fear? Ask your client an exit interview. And what you could have done to keep their business and what the competition did to earn theirs. So you might learn to tie your shoe and straighten your tie and you had a little mustard on your face. Those are the things, my friend, through skinning knees, losing a client, and that sort of experience that eliminates any sort of fear when you happen to see that in the future.
Hi there, it's Glenn, the voiceover artist. I'm back, and you guessed it, if you're hearing me, that means we're at the midpoint of this episode. Do you have a topic that you feel would benefit from emerging leaders? Then send us a note at simonk@trenchleadership.ca, and if your topic is used on the show, you'll be invited as a special guest host for your episode. Follow Trench Leadership, a podcast from the front on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. And if you feel we've earned it, please help us grow our following by leaving a review and sharing the episodes on your social media platforms. And now, back to the show.
I think that's an important point you bring up, is understanding that we are going to make mistakes. I've mentioned it many times in many episodes. We are going to make mistakes. We are going to shit the bed. There is just no way around that. We're all human beings and that poop is going to flow. That's just the way it's going to be. It's what Sure. we do with it. Do we allow that that example or that moment to create more fear? Do we face it head on? It's a choice we have to make. It might be embarrassing. No one wants to poop their pants, but what do we do with that? Why did that happen? We figure it out. We move forward. And that's important. That's a very important point you brought up there. And I'm curious to know about how we might be able to, if we're inside one of these fearful moments, what advice would you offer emerging leaders to help one of their teammates get through this moment, to be able to remain level-headed, hopefully, to be able to remain productive and understanding how to keep going forward, even though it's a highly stressful, highly fearful moment?
Without knowing exactly the vertical or the past history of these two people, I will share with you one of my secrets that have assisted me in getting past these moments. When individuals are filling out their applications with us, they turn in their resume and they give me all the bells and whistles, Simon. But when I'm there, I ask them to turn their paper over and write me a couple paragraphs of a coming of age moment. Why don't you tell me a time when you beat up a bully, saved a kitten out of a tree, you did something that you really were in your moment that helped you get to a certain stage of adulthood. So maybe I might use that as a nickname for you. I might remind you during that moment that when you were 12 years old, you were the first kid to walk across the dance floor and ask someone to dance. That took a lot of guts. But then when you were the first one to do it, everyone else started dancing and everyone had a great time. Someone needs to be a leader. Someone needs to be the apex. Someone needs to that sort of company culture. Look at it like this. As much as you're thinking about hitting the ball and dragging Johnny, leaders don't need to do that. I'm in awe when somebody finishes my sentence or knows what I'm thinking. So if this is a moment where an individual has the opportunity to either A, share some feedback, make a suggestion, or just how about this, my friend, standing their ground, well, then I think it's an excellent opportunity for them to show who they are. Maybe if you want to just do body language, you were taught this in the military, shoulders back, chest out, chin up, have a good posture to begin with. Secondly, look, as you say, someone in the eyes. And if they're berating you, if they're making suggestions to you, take it. Because when it's your turn to speak, as I mentioned earlier, through passive-aggressive, inadvertent gestures, you can teach them to be more respectful on how you answer. There are ways to readjust a tone. You can move that physics. And if he wants to yell at me six times, I can buffer boomerang him back six times. I'll buffer your negativity. I will name drop you. I will let you know that's an excellent question. Glad you brought it up. We should be speaking about that. Repeating what you said to me, Simon, so I can show active listening and send it back to you in a positive way. I'm not going to do too much. We're not going to spill it over, but you know, 1 feet. 2 feet, that stuff makes a difference. It moves things forward. You were even talking about World War I on these battlefields. People were fighting all day just to win a foot. And I believe that through this sort of non-aggressive nature, where you don't need to yell back or curse or stamp your feet, people are watching you. I think it's an excellent way to show leadership. Now, it depends. Did this individual make a mistake? Are they open for coaching? Are they open for suggestions? Regardless, I think the individual that might be putting that person into this sort of feelings should ask prior to saying something, may I make a suggestion? This was my technique, Simon, if I had to say something to somebody. First, I would get their permission to make a suggestion. I'm the boss. Of course, they're giving me the permission. But then again, my friend, I would tell a story about when I was in their shoes, the days I had more hair and I was a younger man. But I'll talk about the first time I was hung up upon, or when I mispronounced certain words in the military alphabet proper, or there were times my timing was off. And so I was being relatable and, as you mentioned earlier, humble. But to let them know I've been there, so don't spin it. I know this, and I've mastered that level. So if we're going to discuss it, let's bring it out in the open. Let's understand it. Let's take it apart so we can put it to bed and move forward. Because if you do it a second or a third time, you weren't paying attention, or you don't have the sort of initiative to make yourself better. And you and I, my friend, we got hundreds, if not, you mentioned earlier, thousands of people that are under your supervision. So I want to raise all the boats and everybody's going to win. But my goodness gracious, practice your violin for me so we can keep moving forward. And if you do that, then you'll get my time and you'll get my respect. So a lot of it has to do, my friend, about meeting me in the middle. It's not about me doing the homework for you, Simon. That might help reduce somebody's fear as well.
So what I'm hearing in all of that is the need to be prepared in all of the different ways that means. Be prepared for ourselves, be prepared for our team members. And the more prepared that we feel, the more knowledge and power we have, and it's easier to control that fear and hold it back, which makes perfect sense because in the military sense, there is a reason why we drill so much, so often, and so hard. And part of that is that preparation, that constant working at the same thing, all of us doing the same thing at the same time, and all of us instinctively knowing how to move, that we can trust each other are going to move the same way. When the fit hits the shan, the fact of the matter is, when we're ready to go and we need to be courageous, we can do that because we can rely on our experiences to help us get going for, to press forward, to go towards the bullets instead of not doing that, which is what the fear instinct, fight or flight, is trying to tell us to do. That creates that sense of power and helps us get through the fear. Is that an accurate assessment of what you were just saying?
Absolutely. Dedicated practice, you know, things that when you're not in the office, if you're continuing to do this, but for me, I believe that extending their vocabulary has been essential in increasing their confidence levels. Let me give you a great example. We emphasize the thesaurus so you can focus on similes. Obviously, people use the word help, and it's okay. But it can evoke a sort of ego defense, or people don't want to feel like they're being helped and they're, you know, they're helpless. But I prefer using words like guide, assist, lend a hand. These are the sort of things that avoid rabbit holes. You can save time on a phone call and a conversation. And, you know, it's somebody that's in crutches. May I help you? No, don't help me. Allow me to assist to open the door. They'll take it differently and say, sure, you may assist me. Or may I guide you to show you where the steps are? It's different that way. And by choosing that sort of vocabulary, instead of saying, excuse me, we ask for my clarification. Simon, for my edification. These are small swords that we fall on and hills that we die on, because they're not going to kill the call. But if someone's cell connection is terrible, if there's noise in the background, dog barking, children, the works, instead of throwing it on you, throw it on me. For my clarification, did you say ABC? And so we've seen through the thousands and thousands of phone calls that we've analyzed, but just by doing that simple one word tweak, it has really kept the tone positive and people have not found it offensive. And so your generals in the army go to school for public speaking and public relations. They can know how to keep up their appearances. And for me, I just, by growing up how I did and the manners that were taught to me by my parents and grandparents, I knew not only my please and thank yous, but I don't know if you remember Leave It to Beaver. It was almost like Eddie Haskell. You're just extra charming.
I remember that guy, yeah.
I was always the friend that my friend's parents said he can come back because he was just so polite and so nice to us, but in a genuine, sincere way. But I knew how to be extra kind and let them know how delicious their spaghetti sauce was. And at a very early age, ingratiation really taught me that people like compliments, they like sincere thought and people that will say things. And when I'm on the phone with individuals or just meeting with people, I will notice what they put their time and efforts into. Prior to this podcast, you and I, we've had multiple calls and we're very, very interested in each other's lives. But you have a beautiful collection of framed diplomas and awards behind you. And prior to this podcast, we talked about each and every one because I was so interested and you were so proud. And those are the sort of things that I like to do with everybody, because everyone has an amazing story. And, you know, Simon, not only am I your biggest fan, but now I'm like a super fan. I mean, you keep impressing me and your audience. But people need to know that. People need to know that besides us sharing ideas tonight and supporting one another, that we are friends and we do have an active interest in each other's lives. And those are the sort of things that reduce the fear of being on a podcast with you tonight, because Simon, it you know, it's almost like being in your home up there in Canada. And These are excellent examples for your audience, real examples on how you and I have reduced fear for myself to share these stories with you and be here tonight. And so it's very simple, my friends. It's all right out in front of you. You can touch them. You just decide to pick them up and put in your magic bag and use them accordingly.
I thank you very much for being a super fan. I'm blushing right now a little bit about that. And I love that so much. You know, as you were talking about the different things, the thing that came to mind to me is the fact that fear is just one of those things that it can embrace us, and we can work on these things together. And you had said how you try not to use the word help. You found other ways to get to that point. What I do, I do something very similar. I don't use the word help too often. I tend to use the phrase of, well, let's figure this out together. Instead of, I can help you with that, let's figure this out together. Because my mindset is I'm creating an environment where we are all invested in whatever, achieving whatever the goal needs to be, and trying to create it in a positive set. Even though it may be a stressful situation, we can collectively bring our brains together and succeed in whatever way we need to. Same idea. I think that's very similar to what we're saying. So I love how you're talking about that. I think that's a really important point for leaders out there, is shifting just a little bit of the wording to create it in such a way that it's coming, making all of us come together and giving everyone an investment in the solution is important, even if they don't realize it's happening.
And do things privately. You praise publicly and you critique privately. Mm. You don't need to make a show on the floor and give somebody a walk of shame. That's one of the worst things you could do for somebody.
Yes. I'm not going to say I completely agree, because I've said that a whole bunch of times in here, but I do completely agree. So I just did it. I do have to say that Margaret Wheatley is my all-time favorite leadership author. And if I ever have the opportunity to either meet her or big world dream, have her as a guest on this show, will blow my mind away. And I just like to quote her really quickly, if I could, where she talks about fear. And she says, when we can lay down our fear and anger and choose responses other than aggression, we create the conditions for bringing out the best in us humans. And I completely agree with that as well. If we can recognize that we're having these aggressive moments and just put them aside, it's not easy. It's difficult, because fear tends to be an aggressive type of emotional mindset. But if we can recognize that we're in that moment and push that aside, find strategies to do that, that will be the catalyst that will help us move forward, work within our fear, work through our fear, whatever we need to do to achieve whatever the goal has to be. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
Of course. And I guess I like to quote movies. I rewatched Dead Poets Society the other day. And when Robin Williams is whispering in the student's ear, carpe diem, while looking at these football players and these past alumni from the 19th and early 20th century, it hits home. When I go back to Philadelphia every five years for a reunion, I drive by my old neighborhood, and there are certain areas where my grandparents are buried, and I go visit them as well. And I let them know that I'm doing well, but it's also seasons changing, time is passing. And so I guess I'm shedding certain skins in regards to priorities. Things that were bothering me so back in the day really don't mean anything. Time's a ticking. I got another 50 years on this planet. I'm halfway there. I'm going to live to be 100, and that's it. And so what am I afraid of anymore? And you need to be comfortable within your skin. Obviously, you might have dreams as a child to be an astronaut. I'm not an astronaut. I didn't play professional hockey. But other dreams I had, by learning languages and marrying the girl of my dreams, starting a company and having certain luxuries, sure, that's great. But really, if you think about it, some of the greatest experiences you have were making best friends or showing you could do something. A lot of the fear that people have is because they're comparing themselves to others. And I do understand there are certain levels where if you're an athlete, the fastest runner wins, the highest jumper wins. But there are certain times where eclectic individuals, geniuses, people that really think outside the box, like Patch Adams and Dead Poets Society, two characters Robin Williams played that were outside the box, but were geniuses. They cracked codes. I was a huge fan of General George Patton and his military style. I like Chesty, his military style. I loved seeing leaders with their people that earn that sort of, I really enjoyed that. And so for me, at this age that I'm at right now, I don't embrace the fear. I don't egg it on. I don't want to see it every day, but I'm getting too old for it. And it's almost like a boxer that's used to the hits. Not saying my life has been terrible. I've been very blessed, but everybody has their ups and the downs. And it, you know, it gives you that sort of, you know, backbone. You can take it. And so for me now, at this stage, to reduce somebody's fears, the best thing for me to do is to pay it forward. I'm not going to give somebody shortcuts, but I'm going to let them know what to avoid or the certain areas that I did in order to build strength and to have that endurance and to have that sort of vision to move forward in my life. When nobody's a communication major, Spanish major, non-Ivy League, moving abroad, look at those odds. And if you told me that as an 18-year-old man, I would say, sign me up. And then if you let me know that I'd be driving convertibles and having pinball machines, I'd say, I'm definitely going to do this. What are you afraid of? In essence, the major thing that people talk about on their deathbeds is regret. They wish they asked somebody to marry them. They wish they made that extra phone call to that client to close the deal. Or instead of staying in on a Saturday night, going out with their buddies, trying something, doing something. As long as your intentions are honorable and you're doing things with good faith, then by all means, take your leap of faith. You remember Papillon? Guy got off the island on coconuts. Sometimes you walk through deserts. We spoke about forced marches earlier. But if you believe that you will get out of that cave, off of that island, then that's what you're on right now. You're on the island of fear. You have the ability to get off of it. Or if you decide to live there, do what Gilligan's Island did and make it a fun place to live if you have to be on the island of fear.
Yeah, exactly. Because when I was there, you may as well enjoy it. Yeah.
I tell you what, when you're telemarketing, it's not fun, but there are certain ways you can make a game out of it, where if you do certain name drops or you show active listening or do company name spikes, you can get through it. Whistle while you work. There are certain ways when you've seen videos that people without working the kit, you know, when they're flipping the, doing dance moves when they're making pizzas. It's really just your perspective, my friend. That's why people in the gym love the burn. That's usually the best part of lifting weights. Those are just my thoughts. It's not living on the edge. Really, Simon, what it is living. That's all I could really stress to you and your amazing audience.
Well, and that's absolutely it. We have a choice to make when we are confronted with fearful moments. How do we choose to do that? Do we choose to live with them? Do we choose not to live with them? Those decisions are there and we have to go with them. All of this, I have to say, has just been absolutely fantastic. We have talked a lot about understanding fear. We've talked about the power of fear, which was a bit of an unintended choice, but we went that way and it's fantastic. I love that because it's important to note that it can overpower us. And we offered some advice for how people who are in these moments can understand their own fear, how to work through it, and if they're an emergent leader, how they can help their team members get through those fearful moments. So with all of that, I do think this seems like a good time to roll into the lightning round. What do you think?
Lightning round it is. But before we do that, let me share one last thing with you, if I may.
Of course.
I call it a romantic death What does that mean when you make a phone call to someone and they hang up on you? Right. And that happens a lot to a lot of our agents. So in order for you to jump clouds and really have a romantic death, I suggest them to do some name drops, to say the name of the company better than they do. If they ask who you are, repeat the question in a certain way with a smile. And I think it's an excellent way for you not to lie, to show respect. Trench leadership, Simon, how are you today? Not interested, click. I sounded great, I said Simon, you know? And so these are the certain ways that even if you last 1 minute in the battle, it was a beautiful minute. You shot how many arrows? What'd you do with that sword? It was a beautiful death.
Shot
and you'll
your
be
shot.
Loved for it. And so if people can do that 100 times a day, the 101 time, when you get through, imagine what happens then. You're ready to slay the dragon now, aren't you, Simon?
I love it. I love it. Fantastic. Thanks so much for that. Romantic death. I'll be thinking about
yeah.
that.
Had to be done.
I love it.
Yeah. So what you got?
So what we're going to do, folks, is we're going to run into the lightning round. And as always, I always give the guest a copy of the outline, but I do not tell them the five lightning round questions. They are leadership related. Are you ready?
Oh, I've been ready, my friend.
Let's do this. Let's do this. Question one. In 1 minute, describe your perfect leader.
The perfect leader is humble. The perfect leader, in my opinion, is someone that has the luxury of a track record where they could show their progress. They can properly explain in the most simplest of terms how they've begun their journey and what they were able to do in order to get to where they are today. And finally, the best leaders are the ones that break bread and have recess with their people. Ones that play pinball and air hockey and Pac-Man with them. In my opinion, retro arcade gaming, those are the best leaders.
I don't even get me going about Pac-Man. I'm totally in that era with you. So I love it. I love it. Question two, cup half full or cup half empty?
I always believe in half full. If you just gave me a cup, I'd be happy with that. Even if you just spoke to me and gave me the opportunity to have that question, I'd be happy. Really, it's about your perspective. I wake up every day and I'm very thankful for my life. And I believe that this is a gift. And as my grandmother said, it's also a dream. And so for me, if you want to look at it in a certain perspective, does that glass even exist? In my world, it doesn't even matter. Without the glass, my toes are still tapping.
I love it. Question number three. If your leadership style was a famous actor, who is it and why?
Oof. I believe if I had to choose, it would be one of my favorite actors of all time. I can't even compare myself to this individual, but you asked me, so I'm going to answer anyway. I would love to have been associated with the late Basil Rathbone back in the 30s and 40s when he was Sherlock Holmes with Nigel Bruce. When he would walk in the room and his rhetoric was just so choice. And he was excellent with rebuttals and naturally through his intelligence and once again, genius, which so many questioned, he was able to crack some codes and solve cases.
Perfect. Question number four. What would you like to improve about your leadership style?
I guess it's really about maturity. I mean, I'm 50 years old, but I still, from time to time, not just think like a child because of the video games that I like, but I guess I take things in a personal way. If I've been with someone for a long time and we started strong, and all of a sudden they peace out and don't give a 2 weeks notice, I am responsible for my client and I can't fix it. But I think looking in my eyes, handshake, we had a good run together sort of conversation would be a excellent way to a working relationship. Doesn't mean that we can't be friends, but there are certain things professionally that I guess I expected more from individuals. But in this industry, in the call center industry, there is some sort of attrition and rotation, so it's expected.
And the last question, what do you think is your leadership strength?
My leadership strength is the fact that I show empathy towards individuals. I love the people that work with me. I didn't say for me. They work with me. I believe in circles. I believe in synergy. It's not me sitting at the head and everyone else beholden. There's no proletariats in my call center. Everybody's an aristocrat. And the fact, as I mentioned, I walk rows and break bread and play games with them and invest in their careers. I believe that I'm making my Richard Circle complete. Costa Rica has given me such incredible opportunities. The least I can do is to give this back and feed families.
Thank you very much for that. That's it. That was the lightning round. That's not so bad. No problem.
It didn't hurt. Where's my lollipop?
Yeah, exactly. I'll mail it to you for sure. We'll get you a big Canadian one. It'll be fantastic. It'll be maple syrup and poutine. So listen, Richard, this has been fantastic. We have had a very rich and deep and meaningful conversation talking about fear and all of its different ways. Maybe not necessarily all of its different ways, but certainly quite a few of them. If people want to hear more from you, they want to hear more about your story, your impact, or they want to learn more from you, how can people do that?
Well, I believe they should buy a first-class plane ticket and come fly down and come visit me. Especially when it gets really cold up there in your winters.
It's happening here now. So you may have a guest in me here in a bit.
Perfect. And we have a very large Facebook fan page, about 105 local Costa Rican Ticos. And once this goes live, Simon, you're going to have so many new fans. And it will also give your audience a chance to see the business process outsourcing industry, the pulse of it in Central America. Now, just real quick, we're north of Panama. South of Nicaragua, we're the only democratic society in Central America. There's no standing army, Simon. So we have a 95% literacy rate. They put all that money back into education. We have the best infrastructure. They claim that Costa Ricans have the most neutral in regards to English accent. And companies such as Amazon, HP, Intel, and Oracle are here. They're known for medical tourism and especially ecotourism. So if you love surfing and zip lining, waterfalls, monkeys, iguanas, and butterflies, this is the place to be. And I got 1,001 questions for you and your audience.
You sold me on it. We're going to have to talk about this afterwards. This has been, this has been fantastic. Thank you much for your time today. And I'm excited to get this out there so that people can learn from your wisdom and obviously the love that you have for helping other people. It just oozes out of you. And I've just enjoyed this so much. Thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure was mine, Simon. Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap from the front. In this episode, you heard from Richard Blank, the CEO for Costa Rica's call center. And in this episode, we talked about fear. We talked about the need to understand it, see it, work within it, work outside of it, work behind it, beside it, whatever way that works best for you to understand how to not let fear conquer you, but to let the fear be a tool that you can use to conquer whatever it is that you and your team need to take care of. We also talked about how we can find ways to use these items in a practical sense to help ourselves and our team members. But most importantly, we talked about the need to make sure that we're able to use fear in a way that makes the most sense for all of us, to be comfortable with it, and to be able to keep going forward. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, leadership without passion limits the depth of your vision.
So, how was the episode? Were you engaged? Did you finish the episode with a piece of leadership ammunition to help you lead from the trenches? Was this episode relevant and helpful? If so, never miss an episode by following us on all of your favorite podcast feeds. While you're there, and if you feel it's merited, please consider leaving an episode review. If the episode missed its mark, we need your help to refine the topic, so reach out and let us know how we can improve the show for you and all of our listeners. Be sure to join us next week with your host, Simon Cardinal, for another episode of Trench Leadership, a podcast from the front. A proud supporter of the Concussion Legacy Foundation and Project Enlist. Episodes produced by iGlen Studios. Music provided by Ashamalov Music.